Thanks very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, let's jump right in. John Najarian is on the phone line. You see him on CNBC, of course, from the Najarian Family Office as well. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Great to be back.
I just want you to hold me and tell me it's going to be okay, John.
Well, can we do that on the radio?
Well, I think I'd be most comfortable if we did. Right?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that need a little holding right now, I think.
What I've been reading today from a couple of experts is that the way there was such a swing to start the market, the trading today, and then such a quick recovery, regardless of where we are right now, that might be some sort of sign that the market had found its bottom. Now, I don't know if you buy into that or can explain that for me, but what do you make of that?
Well, I think there were a couple things that were behind that craziness of yesterday afternoon, Stephen. One of them was obviously some of these ETFs, the volatility ETFs. Now, that's something most of your listeners are never going to trade.
Right.
And I would probably counsel them, don't trade those things. But a lot of big companies do, as a way to try to get ahead of the market as it starts to slide.
So then these contracts get
more valuable as the market goes down.
So as we see the VIX start to go up, that's what triggers more and more trading on Wall Street?
Yes, okay. In particular on these volatility contracts. Now, one of them, believe it or not, blew up yesterday, and that was 90% in my mind of yesterday's debacle. Because as that contract was blowing up and so many people had it as a hedge, they needed to trade out of it. By blowing up, I mean they are literally delisting this product.
Wow.
In 2 weeks. So that it erased years worth of gains, but it's a gain that came in the volatility complex. Again, most people listening in your audience have never and will never trade it, but a lot of hedge funds use that, and a lot of, unfortunately, people that were in that trade are now out of it. It's gone from $99 yesterday to $4 today.
Oh my God. All right, Dow is up now 55 points. The S&P is up just a fraction or so. Do we qualify this as a correction?
Certainly.
Because we all, John, I'm watching the numbers yesterday, and I mean, it was almost exciting, frankly, how quickly it happened. But I think I was prepared. In fact, everyone talks, we all knew something like this was going to happen. I guess we just want to know that this was that.
Yeah. Well, many of us that are in the market on a daily basis know that markets don't go straight up. They don't in blockchain or Bitcoin, and they certainly don't in the stock market. But from the beginning of the year, we had literally gone straight up.
Right.
We were up every single day. And it might not be huge, but 0.5% a day on a 22-day month puts you up 10 or 11%, and that's about where we were. We erased all of that virtually in the last 2 days. Now, today, on the lows of today, we got very close to that 10% correction. That is pretty much a normal correction. If you go past that, then people wonder, are we going to see a 20% correction? But we got down to that about 8.75%, 9% correction, and money came back into the markets very quickly.
I had to smile a little bit. Steve Mnuchin was before House Committee and even, talked about how he kept his iPhone on the table because he wanted to watch the markets. But, of course, the Trump administration saying the economy, the fundamentals are strong, things are going well, and urging people not to be overly concerned about this. And I think that's what I'm hearing from you as well.
Yes. I think the reason is that we've got growth and the fact that wages were better than expected. To me, that's a good thing. It wasn't out of control inflation. It was good inflation because it was relatively contained. If you get 5 reports in a row, like we had the last Friday, now that could be something that the market is going to react to negatively. But overall, the interest rate products jumped a little in anticipation of more interest rate hikes in 2018. And in fact, they got up to about an 80% chance that we would see at least four of those. That was last Friday. Mm-hmm. Then, after yesterday's volatility in the market, the Atlanta Fed knocked down its GDP estimates, which I thought were ludicrous.
Yeah, they were at five, right? They said 5%?
5.4.
Wow.
They were at 5.4. They knocked it down to 4, which, again, I think both are ludicrous. Number one, to have it at 5.4, and number two, to knock it down by that much on a percentage basis, that's a 20% drop in your outlook for the fourth quarter GDP. That's ludicrous based on a one-day move in the stock market.
Sorry, John Najarian, thanks for coming by. I'm feeling better. I think you did your job.
All right. Well, good. Thank you, Steve.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Muchin is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff. You listen to that podcast at WGNradio.com and elsewhere. Suzanne, welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. You have a little, there's like a schmutz.
Like a little yellow cheese-ish.
Yeah, it's like, have you been having nachos?
I was licking the cheese off my fingers.
Were you eating man nachos?
Doritos.
Man Doritos.
Doritos.
Right, man Doritos. That sounds like a musical instrument, a mandarin.
Best story ever.
Okay, so the CEO of PepsiCo, well, a woman, comes out in an interview and says that they're developing a woman Dorito.
Yes.
Explain that for me.
So her theory was that men eat Doritos in a way that doesn't really take into account the fact that their fingers are going to turn that funny yellow and that it crunches very loudly, and that men tend to actually be okay, which I have seen, taking the bag of Doritos and kind of doing all, like pouring it into their mouths.
Yeah.
But women just don't do that.
How often have you seen that?
Oh, I've seen it.
With adolescents or with men?
No,
really?
No. My business partner and I can recall a meeting not so long ago where a guy literally took the bag, tilted his chin back, and tipped it into his mouth in a meeting. So her theory was women won't. They don't enjoy eating Doritos quite as much because of all of the stickiness. So they're going to develop a new lady Dorito that won't leave the cheese on your fingers.
You know what I think is unladylike?
Wait, I'm sorry. And won't crunch quite as much.
I was just going to say what I think is unladylike is the big crunch.
I mean,
you know, there's nothing worse than sitting with a woman and then she makes a big crunch eating a Dorito.
Can you imagine that this is actually a discussion? So what happened, which is awesome, is that all of this backlash occurred because women were saying, what? So now you don't only want to silence us with our voices, but you want to silence our crunching?
Okay, how does this happen? Because it's a woman.
Yeah.
This is the sort of thing that if a man had said, you would have just said the monumental ignorance and out of touchedness of this guy.
It got a pretty decent amount of backlash in spite of the fact that their CEO is a well-known and very well-respected female CEO. I think these things are just the kind of commentary that would have a year ago, 2 years ago, come and gone. And today women take the bigger picture look and go, are you actually saying I shouldn't lick my fingers?
Or maybe, you know, sometimes really smart people say stupid things.
Sometimes.
And it just happens and then you move on.
Yeah. I to be honest, the lady Dorito to me, kind of attractive. Not so much because of the finger licking and the crunch, but because it gets on your clothes.
Me too. I'd like a lady Dorito.
You would? Would you be okay eating the lady Dorito in public?
One of my first cars was a Ford Probe.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if you remember those back in the late 80s.
Sure.
I had one and I'm driving around with a Bears player in my car. He's like, yeah, you know, these were made for women. I'm like,
oh,
what?
No. Did you sell it that next day?
I didn't, but it changed things a little bit. And then I found out it was a car marketed to women.
There you go.
I'm womenish. Okay, so let's go to the Grammys.
Yeah.
And we talked going into the Grammys about the fact that there was a real sort of awareness that women aren't as musically talented as men.
Right, that was your opinion because you don't listen to Beyonce.
Oh, right.
Is where this whole thing starts. But the Grammys have had their challenges over the years with diversity. Lots of discussion around the absence of people of color and all that. Obviously, with the trends, the focus has been very much on women. And historically, actually, of the 899 artists who have in the last 5 years been nominated for a Grammy, only 9% have been women. So there really is a gap.
It's one of the only awards competitions where it's not broken down. Men, you know, best actor, best actress.
So some, you know, we should correct that. Some of them are. It's MTV Music Awards that have taken the gender out of it. Grammy still has best female recording artist.
Oh, do they? I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, they do. But that being said, they only had one female in a blended category who won, and they only had one female performer.
On the show?
On the show.
Wow, that's something they can fix.
So in the meantime, the head of the association, like the head of, I don't even know Neil Portnow's official title, but the recording
industry. I think former, it starts with former.
No, I don't know that he's been fired yet, but the recording industry's board of trustees, who's a really powerful guy, is in an interview that he knows is being recorded. And when asked about the gender gap with women, says the following. He says, you know, I feel like there's a real opportunity for women to step up here. And that didn't go over so well.
Because the women are already doing what the women do. They're just not being recognized.
They're not being recognized. So first women were quiet, and then a letter went out earlier this week that had six prominent women in the industry signing it, executives, not just performers, who said he needs to go.
All right. So what's the fix? I mean, is the fix...
I think that the fix has to start, as many of these things do, with having more diversity at the level of decision makers, not only having men speak on behalf of the recording industry, and then also being more cognizant of the fact that what you do on television on an award show like this is being watched.
It is funny because if you think of some of the biggest performers right now, they're women.
Pink, who did the national anthem.
Beyonce.
I mean, we could go on and on. The women are dominating and yet unrecognized.
I didn't know. I made that mistake.
Did you know who sung the national anthem at the Super Bowl?
Did you know that they had a military flyover? Did you know that?
I did. I watched it.
It's an enclosed stadium.
No, but it wasn't inside the stadium.
I understand that, but a military flyover is presumably for the fans at the stadium.
Right, that's
true. There was
a
roof there.
It was a drone, or it had, like, you know, you could see it on camera. But it was Pink singing.
Yes. Did you see her throw out her lozenges right before it started?
I did, right? I thought it was a piece of
that.
Gum.
Yeah. Suzanne Muchin, check out the podcast, The Big Payoff, at WGNRadio.com. See you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Happy Tuesday to you along the Michigan Avenue studios, the Allstate Showcase studio here in Tribune Tower. We're just sitting with Barry Sterner between snowstorms. Barry, the CEO, founder of Townstone Financial. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
When you're dealing with mortgages and people buying homes and the stock market is doing this, I mean, I imagine it's not like a financial advisor where worried people are on the phone calling you, or have you run into that?
Well, I mean, yesterday, I guess the positive out of it, you know, when you were watching the market go from 11 to 1500, is the bond market, the 10-year bond, rallied tremendously. I mean, we were at 2.85, 2.87 yesterday morning, and when we finished the day yesterday, we were at 2.70. Interest rates were probably better by anywhere between a quarter and 3/8 of a point, and that was actually pretty good for if you were trying to refinance or purchase a house. But, you know, bam, this morning we're back up to 2.78, 2.79 on the 10-year.
So. All right, so what has all of this? I mean, you know, things have been going so well. Interest rates have been so low. And yet, really, the activity, I mean, out there, it's still been hampered, right, by a lack of supply or a lack of product out there to buy.
On the low, I don't even want to say low end, $350,000, you know, to $150,000 house in the Chicagoland area, there's still a lack of supply. Most real estate professionals will tell you that it's very, very difficult for people to find the right house in the particular area that they want to live, with the school and things of that nature in the suburbs, because there's a lack of supply. However, and I've said this before, you know, we're 10 years from 2008, let's call it the high, the apex of the market, and many people have called us now between December and January, we're rolling here into February, saying, hey, you know what, I'm pretty much where I was at 2008, I'm break even now, if I sell my house, I'm not going to lose money, I'm anticipating, we'll have to see what happens in the spring here, that a lot of those people are going to put their houses on the market, and you're going to see some more product.
The idea was that they were not selling their house because they were underwater, or at least close to being underwater after the big crash.
Right, and they didn't want to throw any money in when they were selling their house.
The obviously. Buyers are there.
Oh, the buyers are there. Right now, it's not like, you know, when we came out of last winter, January and February, the buyers were crazy. I mean, I had never seen so many people being pre-qualified rolling into the spring since since the debacle we had in 2008. I said that last year. This year, they're a little more tempered, but they're still out there. People see wage growth. We had 2.9% wage growth last Friday. People are more comfortable at their jobs right at the moment.
Consumer confidence keeps going up.
Consumer confidence is up. People are going to buy houses. I really don't think that everyone's sitting at their dining room table and saying, oh my God, you know, the stock market went down. Traders are worried, but the average American, you know, looks and says, hey, market's been up for 6-9 straight months. It's great.
I think I brought this up with you before, but it just strikes me every time you tell that scenario that you're like a guy. I mean, all the pieces are in place except for the part you can't control. I mean, you've got the buyers, you've got the money's available, and you're just knocking on these people's doors saying, please sell your house, please sell your house. I mean, there's not too much you can do to encourage that.
No, and the bidding wars, when people have to go out and bid up on houses, it's disappointing to them. You know, when you have to put an offer in above what the house is selling for, it kind of leaves a bad taste in their mouth when that's happening. If they're going to go hit the offer on a house, they expect to get that house. And when there's multiple offers, it makes it tough for the market to, you know,
How often are you seeing bidding like that?
We have not seen it here in the winter like we did back in the fall, right, and the summer. There was no doubt those lower end houses for sure were being bid up. It continued all the way through October and November. It's not, you know, it hasn't been as crazy as it was in the spring and the summer, but they're still out there.
Super Bowl's over. That's the season, right? Once the Super Bowl is over, yeah, things
absolutely
start to pick up.
You know, the housing market has changed over the last 5 or 6 years, where in the winter when it was dead and we could all leave for a couple months, it's really not like that. People are looking for houses all the time. You know, when you have the internet and everything going on, you know, it makes it very simple for them. They don't have to go, you know, walking around, as you said, you know, in between the snowstorms here, right, to go find a house.
Okay, so the mortgage rates are going up,
yes,
right? But I think it's important to point out that when we talk about these increases, 0.25%, 0.5%, even sometimes a 0.5%, there's an impact. You'd rather have the lower rate, but sometimes it's not always a disqualifying impact.
Right.
I mean, the rates are going up, but it doesn't mean that it's still not within people's reach.
And I want to give everyone an example, okay? So a $200,000 mortgage at 4%, a principal and interest payment is $955. If interest rates go up 0.5% and your new mortgage rate was 4.5%, that's a $59 increase. It's $1,014. If it moves up a full percentage point, or a full percentage point to 5%, that would be the average 30-year fix, and we're nowhere near that right now, so don't get all worried about it. That's $1,073. So that's $118 on a full point for a $200,000 mortgage. Hopefully, your increases that you're getting at work right now would substantiate being able to pay another $118.
Have you seen, it's weird, okay, I was going to say, have you seen traffic change or increase because people are afraid the mortgage rates are going to go up? Or are they taking that sort of in stride and we're going to buy when it's time for us to buy?
The truth of the matter is, when people are calling right now and finding out that rates are higher, they seem to be in a little bit of shock. You know, people don't follow. You, when you're watching CNBC right now or any other time, you're really not looking at the 10-year. It doesn't show what rates are doing all the time. They know what the stock market's doing. But when they say, hey, I'm at 3.5% now, and I tell them that your new mortgage is going to be 4.25%, it's a little
yeah,
shocking to them.
Barry Cerner, where do people find you?
You can give me a call at Townstone Financial at 312-896-2110 or go to townstone.com, and we're happy to help you out.
Founder, CEO of Townstone Financial, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I'll see you again real soon. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we were talking to Suzanne Muchen earlier in the program about saying the wrong thing on a couple of fronts. The Me Too movement has been very big. The awareness of sexual harassment in the workplace has been very big. And that's the sort of stuff that Philip Weiss deals with at Seyfarth Shaw at Work. He joins us in the studio now. Philip, good to see you again. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
So, you know, one of the first things I saw this morning when I got on the Edens was a car spun out going the wrong way and a tow truck there, right? Mm. So in bad weather like this, tow trucks are busy. I don't suppose they enjoy seeing people crash their cars or being injured, and yet still they're busy. I don't know if a car crash and a sexual harassment scandal is the same thing in office, but I would imagine you've been pretty busy lately.
Yeah, we have. It is a philosophical conundrum that we face, which is it's not much of a silver lining to get a lot of business,
right,
when it's in the wake of some potentially severe misconduct. So we're trying to get ahead of it for the future.
How much have the complaints increased?
dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, we see seasonal spikes, but this is more of a phenomenon spike because of the entire Me Too.
You see seasonal spikes when it comes to harassment?
Holiday parties.
Oh, okay.
Certain company events in the summertime. We've talked about those.
Right.
So there's almost a predictive value to that. This is entirely different. This is a real sea change in the way people are thinking about how they're treated, in the willingness of people to step up, and how companies have to be ready for those complaints.
I know you did a survey of, about 400 companies you work with.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like they were overly prepared.
Yeah, and in fairness, we talked about this on the break, they were smaller to mid-sized companies. So there are going to be resource availability questions.
So you're right. If you're a guy or a woman just trying to get by, and right. It's like, well, it might be smart to do this, but it takes some investment too.
Yeah. But a lot of these were $20, $30 million companies. They weren't mom and pops
right.
entirely. But what was true across the board of the 400 that we surveyed is about 140 had seen their own spike or unexpected increase in people coming forward with complaints. Sometimes emails to the CEO that he or she had never seen before. What was also dramatic was maybe 13, about a dozen, no more than that, had actually thought to invest, to proactively spend time and some money on how to intake those complaints, how to investigate them.
Is that because people think that they can handle it as it comes up?
Yeah, exactly right. It's partly because it's
and,
new.
And can they?
No, they can't. And no, they don't.
Right.
Not without at least some forethought and a little bit of preparation.
Explain that for me.
Well, you know, everyone's good at sort of the informing part. At least we hope they are. Let people know we have a standard. A lot of memos going out. But part of the informing piece is letting people know that if you bring it up, we'll respond effectively, promptly, thoroughly. And that's where they fall short.
You know, and we talk about this a lot. I remember going back to the ADA conversation we had. People might be well-intentioned. They might think they're prepared to do it.
Yeah.
But then when it happens, they find out it's over their head. And sometimes what people try to do to solve a situation makes it worse.
Right, because they're just falling back on whatever they think they should do. We call it sort of the CSI in our world. That's the conduct scene investigation.
Right.
We're not talking about crimes necessarily. And everyone seems to take their own approach or use their own default skills, and that results in all kinds of problems. One example is what we call the FBI interrogator syndrome. Everyone thinks that they are the TV sleuth.
Exactly.
And they think if they grill an employee who they suspect is not being truthful long enough about the facts, the person will inevitably contradict themselves.
Well, Philip, they do on TV almost every Wednesday night.
Yeah, well, that, you know, we never want to use that as our approach to maintaining legal safety in the workplace.
Well, and sometimes people will bring the accuser and the accused into a room together.
Yeah, that's another huge, huge risk. We call it not the FBI piece, it's the face-off risk. You figure you bring them together in the privacy of the back room or the cafeteria, and they'll either air out their differences or someone will sort of cave in and admit they were not telling the truth. Neither of those things ever seems to happen.
All right, so what is the best approach to take? What should businesses do now and before the calls come in later?
Yeah. So number one, you want managers to know how to intake complaints. That can be accomplished through simple training. But you also want someone to be your investigator. And that person needs to understand that they have to have a process in place. How do you pick the right person for that role? Do they know what questions to ask? Do they know how to document the questions they ask and not go too far, whether it's grilling someone or telling them, you know what, we're not leaving here until we get the truth out of you.
Right.
That's a common mistake and very expensive.
Philip Weiss, the Managing Director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you again soon.